and built out bus. We're thinking about switching up how that looks. And then I also had Gabrielle Branson present a 15-year history of fire staff. If you'll take a look at that for just a moment. I wanted to see if there were any trends. Kelly really touched on something. There's a lot of you. In just a minute. Kelly touched on something that I was thinking about. Fire season, fire year, hurricane year. How many of you have been using that language? I wanted to see how it was impacting Alaska. And what we found out, although there are some freak early season fires, January, February, we are starting to creep in all of our agencies to longer seasons here in Alaska. And it's incremental. And that season, which used to be right our conversion date, what did that mean for everybody? Topper. What does conversion mean to you?
What's your question?
What does conversion date mean to you besides the date? I mean, what does that symbolize for the state of Alaska?
Conversion date, just the conversion date.
Oh. We're talking about the length of our seasons.
What does it mean to us?
Yeah.
Okay. And how you manage your resources, how you plan.
Well, I mean, certainly at conversion date, some arbitrary number out there, our approach to firefighting changes. First of all, on any established fires out there, any new starts, simply the burn period is much less threatening. The large fire growth is less threatening, and it lets us change how we manage fires and also our availability of resources for other duties, particularly possibly lower 48 assignments or other assignments.
Right, and I think that might be changing, and this is just my gut instinct, but I think that's changing, and this year is a good example of that. We ended up having to stand the team down because we came back in the fire season, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Things are changing. The discussion still has to happen. JWAT, you and I have this hallway conversation frequently. What does conversion date mean to you?
Well, often not very much because in my area it might still be dry, so just overall they've decided that we're going to convert, but I still have an obligation to respond to fires, so.
I would contend that your area is always ready to burn. You're the reason I'm at work in August at 10 o'clock.
But
I agree with you. Does anybody else have any thoughts about that? Have you observed any changes in the way that you have to think about how you're managing fires in our season and the demands that the lower 48 are putting on us? And although it's incremental, it's happening. And so I wanted to challenge our fire managers to start asking themselves some questions. One is, what does conversion mean? And can we really plan the same way that we used to? I mean, I associated, when I started out in Galena way back in 2006, it was like, conversion date, going to lower 48, I'll see you back in September. I'm checking out, and I'm going to Maui.
One other, I guess, perspective that we have, though, is prior to the conversion date, and we'll call it solstice for that matter, is we look at limited fires much differently now than we have given the length of the fire season. So given the experience that we had in 2004, where we let limited fires go that were close proximity to full or communities in particular, those are the ones that give us the most problems because they're well established and they're big fires all season long now. And so,
right.
Looking at limited fires, we go after those a lot of times, early in the season.
If we think they're going to cause a problem. And that probably is going to be more and more important as we look at our staffing challenges. I know the Department of Interior has taken a pretty big cut. AFS, in theory, doesn't have enough money to cover RTO. I know the state of Alaska is in that same challenge. And so I am asking all of you as interagency, mid to upper managers, to come together and think about ways that we need to reevaluate how we manage fire and how we manage our organizations and how we're going to manage our staff. You talked about compassion and taking care of people. We're doing more with less, doing less with less. What are those options? And I'm wondering also if we need to think about the character of our seasons and how they change. I know I now, talking about work-life balance, I took 2 weeks off in August. That being said, I'll probably be down in, you know, the southern area helping with hurricanes maybe in November. That didn't used to be my life. And so I want to throw this out there to you. I mean, have you all been having any of these thoughts and conversations with your staff? This is interactive. There's no PowerPoint. No PowerPoint. Babette, are you guys thinking about it? I mean, the Forest Service, come on, you were the stars this year. 62 acres on the Tagus. Which... Yeah, with our pants down.
Yeah.
In a world of hurt, right? how about over here in the dorm? What do you see in the southeast? I'm sorry, in the southwest.
Well, like, I think in a few, different areas, like in the Matsu, we're seeing more fire season. We get fire in October, November now. After the frost, we never had that before. It's becoming more and more common. So I think that's one change. But as far as the conversion, I don't think it really affects how the decision making is. It's time on the fire, you gather your information, you gotta make a decision on what to do, whether it's limited, modified, or full. It's kind of just with information that you can't. There's a lot of work on the site to say
right, every fire gets a discussion, right?
Yes.
And you can't bank on it as much anymore, I don't think. Let's see, Peterson, are you seeing anything?
For me, when the conversion day comes around, it's just another day. It doesn't mean anything. It's not going to change the way we operate. We keep things on the ground. We're still going to go fly fires.
Thank you.
Okay, and then does anybody have any thoughts? Jake, am I over time?
No, this doesn't work currently. I was trying to do this for the questions. So if you don't speak up, I'm going to come and run you down and put this in your hand.
Bye-bye.
So I have a question for you. What about the pressure coming from Lower 48? We have this conversion day. There's this concept or perception down south that, okay, middle of July is coming around. We're starting to expect to receive resources from Alaska. So what kind of pressure are you seeing at the GAC when maybe the fire managers here in the state are not quite so willing to let go?
I think we see a lot of pressure. I mean, rain.
So we've had some pretty good communications with Chris Wilcox, our MAC rep, and he's done an excellent job of communicating that to MAC, I believe. How we're able to respond to the fires up here is way different than how we're able to in Lower 48. They can drive to their fire. It's not an option for us so much. So we're able to hang on to smoke jumpers and support aircraft and all the support function that goes along with that for AFS and for Southwest as well. So I think, having those conversations and then trying to educate I think one of the things that Doug Alexander brought up was the changing face of NMAC. A number of those folks have changed in the last 2 years. And I think, on the CGAC side of it as well, that's gonna be the deal where we have to re-educate those folks as well. We do things different. We do get pressure, for sure. But I think, the communication that we have with Chris, folks that have worked in our office, Arlene, Diane, I think they've helped out quite a bit, where we're able to communicate to those folks when we do their daily NMAC briefings, let them know that, hey, Alaska, we do need two or three loads of smoke jumpers and aircraft and lower 48 screaming for us. And we got towns are burned over. We still have responsibility here as well.
And I would say also, though, one of the hard discussions that we have, and Dave, I participate with you frequently in our tactical briefings and our pre-tactical briefings and with the state as well. But when it really starts happening in the lower 48, there's more people, there's more things at risk, there's more money at risk in theory. And so it is a challenge. And what is more important, right, for us? We need our smoke jumpers for initial attack. They do too. They need middle management overhead. We had a ridiculous amount of middle management overhead requests this year to try to support the lower 48. Great Basin, Northern Rockies, California, Northwest, all burning at the same time. And we don't have as big as fire, so it can be a little challenging to represent that, or even maybe even justify it. But then are we gonna fill the team, right? 85 people, standing roster from Alaska, which does very important work. But how we establish those priorities are the discussions that we need to have on an interagency basis. And I think that we need to be sending the same message up the chain as our budgets get cut, as people question how we do our business. And that's all of us, Forest Service, Park Service, Fish and Wildlife, State of Alaska, BIA. And I don't know, I mean, Dave, do you have any other thoughts on that as far as the challenges?
Well, I think a lot of them have been touched on. For me, really, conversion date, I've heard the comment, it is just another day, but it's a big day in the eyes of those who aren't necessarily up here. And so I think for us, July 10th is as much about managing expectations as it is anything else. There's some years when July 10th comes and we're ready to open the doors and send them out, but and there's no silver bullet. There's no one-size-fits-all solution to dealing with the competitive nature of resource shortages, especially when seasons like 2018 in California happened and we're relatively quiet. I think we have an onus, even though we have a responsibility still up here, we still have an onus on a national level to provide what we can. So again, it's not a one-size-fits-all, but I do think, for me anyway, July 10th is about expectations more than anything.
Thank you. And Butter, did you have a statement? I thought I saw your hand go up.
Oh, I was just gonna say, I'm seeing that every year, one need pretty much everywhere is for dispatchers. Mm-hmm. And there was a good article in 2 Chainz about the trauma experienced by dispatchers. From what you're seeing, are we gonna be okay as far as being able to fill all the positions that are needed in dispatch or cover that?
Well, that was one positive thing that did happen. This year at AICC, we were able to fill 3 of our career seasonal positions, and it really, and we also changed kind of how we did our business. We combined our tactical and aircraft logistics desks together to get more efficiency. And I think that's how dispatch offices are evolving. It's more like getting everybody cross-trained so that you can do every job there, because there are so many dispatch vacancies. I don't have the stats, but I don't know of a fully staffed dispatch office. And our folks are getting beat up. Last year in Utah, there was a suicide. Not very many people talked about it. They talk a lot about firefighters, but there wasn't a lot of conversation about that woman. One of ours in UIT went out on a training assignment. Still breaks me up. Her first day on the desk, she experienced a fatality. And people don't think about that. And it happens over and over. In Nancy's office, they had the engine rollover. Can you imagine listening to that on the radio? So I think that we need to think about our whole agency and all the support functions, including our admins who have special relationships with those people.
Sorry.
So I guess if we look back at this particular fire season in general, when you mentioned we stood the team down to cover TOC or an increasing fire season,
Yeah.
I don't want to downplay the need for Alaska firefighting, but we do have the luxury of big open country and the ability to make good risk based decisions on, particularly on values at risk and hazards to firefighters for that matter. I mean, we put 150 people on that fire in Tok to protect a couple of allotments and a couple of public cabins. Okay, so that was our responsibility as Alaskan firefighters. But in the meantime, we also have the luxury of an extremely talented and experienced workforce. And if you look at the environment in the lower 48 right now, it's an awful complicated, complex fire environment. There's high values at risk. There's transportation corridors. There's economics. There's public risk. And these are billions of dollars of improvements and communities and ranches and so on and so forth. And their fire season is certainly accelerating at a greater rate than ours are. And an obligation for us nationally is to provide a qualified workforce to handle that problem that is facing the people in the lower 48 right now. I feel that's our duty. You're a federal agency.
And I would agree. I think that on a personal obligation, many of us are in this because we believe in the work that we do, and that is important. But I don't think the funding is going to support that. And that's where we're challenged as an interagency community to come together and figure it out, right? I mean, we can talk doom and gloom, but the fact is we're all committed to be here, and we need to do it together and pass up the same information. And I did want to get to Chris. You were... Thanks, Chris. And then, Zeke?
Yeah, I was just went back to begin this discussion talking about conversionism, whether that's been changing. And I just been looking at the Lotus detection history, and actually, since 2009, there have been not very many Lotus detections after that July 10th date.
Yeah.
So it is a lot about perception, and I think also about responsibility. That Jay's responsibility doesn't go away, even if the risk is decreasing. That if it occurs, and because we have such an episodic fire season, we have to maintain that level of responsibility, even in the face of some of the statistics.
Right, and I would say that the number of fires and acres burned does not necessarily determine our workload, right? I have to be there. Jen has to be on the tactical desk if somebody needs smoke jumpers because they might get a fire. And if we're getting fires later and it's not because of lightning, the fuel is there, the fuel's ready to burn, but it's people. And that's always, who knows what they're gonna do. Back here, Willie.
Yeah, just what Tom was talking about with one Tech 3 fire stands down to Tech 1 team. Well, it's been mentioned over and over and over again. That is declining. We have one Tech 3 fire to 10 of them this year. We're pretty much tapped out. Maybe we can have two large Tech 3s at one time. But that's, we're lack of resources. Fire specialists, we had 26 back in the day, maybe 30 John's point, I mean, it is a reality, though. You do have a responsibility, Alaska. Take three teams, goes out 11, 9 or 11 of us on that team for type 1 team members. So if that's a perspective that we're looking at, and that's the reason why the type, well, that's not the reason why type 1 teams stay down, but you were to take the type 1 team south, you're going to take at least 7 to 8 of those people where, you know, were actual needed positions with the type 1 team on the south. And so that's a, you know, that's a real life perspective of what a type 3 organization and the type 1 team have in common, is they have a lot of the same.
So what are we going to do? That solve the world's problems.
No, it's not on that. But what I wanted to remind everybody, and please with it, conversion date. The coordinating group is representing all of you, and we hold the FMOs, the jurisdictional and the protection area FMOs for that conversion date time. So it isn't that magic. I hate that magical number of July 10th or 15th, whatever it is, but it's that point. But we, the most important thing I guess I want to express is the communications between the agency administrators, the FMOs, jurisdictional protection, and then with your representative to your coordinating group that meets and makes the decision on that conversion date. Because yes, the gates open, everybody flies out. My usual question then is, who's guarding the fort? You know, what's our minimum drawdown? And that's my concern as a jurisdiction. But I want you to not forget that it's a cohesive effort brought on by the coordination group. And there is your rep is the person that makes that decision. So I hated to transition all the way around back, but I'm over here in the corner and you weren't looking this way.
Sorry.
I just wanted to add one more thing. I think the way we've got our management options set up in Alaska, they are the easy button, and I don't think that the management options statewide necessarily represent where the values are. In some places they're better than others. The easy button for that initial response is to do what the management option says, but you know, Tom was talking about taking some non-standard responses earlier. And this year, I think we took some non-standard responses later on the other side as well. And I think we need to start, we have limited resources, we need to really start thinking about, just because this fire is full, do we really need to jump this fire? What is it threatening? We need to take the time to make those decisions early. I think we're getting some better predictive tools, and you know, as long as there's communication and these decisions aren't being made in a vacuum, I think that's one step we can take to be more efficient.
And then just to give some perspective, I think I meant to toss these stats out earlier, but our first real lower 48 orders came May 7th for Arizona, for overhead. And in July, we had 1,272 resource orders for the lower 48. In August, 1,880, and in September, 856, and in October, 43 and counting. And granted, many of these are repeat orders, right? We UTF them, and then we have to place the order through again the system. But that gives you some perspective of the work that still happens up here, even when we're not fighting fire. And number of acres, number of fires don't represent our workload. Does anybody else have any thoughts on this? Ed? No.
I think I heard a couple questions. One was you were talking about weather, right? So you talked October 10th, look out here. I've lived in Alaska. I lived in Cook, Alaska. I grew up there in Cook, Alaska, where the norm was 46 below the winter track. That's not the norm anymore. Now,
so that was the norm when I was a kid and what I'm seeing now. And we talked about fires on landscape, we talked about risk management. Tom was talking about, what folks over here, is at the back end, when we talk about conversion time, I mean, that's just a date we set there. And that's where we're at a point where we're going to That's where we manage risk. Are we good with fire and landscape out there after this certain date? And that's the decision we have to make as land managers and FMOs. We can still deal with fires out there. I think we can still support folks that are out there in Well 48. And what it really comes down to is, I mean, when's our fire season start? When's the end? We all know that in Lower 48, in addition to Alaska, because we do our planning cycle throughout the year, and we continue doing that. And it goes beyond just the FMOs, agency administrators, dispatchers, and planning for next year, all that other stuff. So I think we're on the right track. I think we just need to tighten stuff up. You know, we're going to talk about IMT stuff later, and I'm going to save my comments for that, and I think we can do better out there.
Thanks.
Great, thank you.
These graphs are great that you put together.
Gabriella Branson put these together. But it kind of shows, you know, our fire seasons are weird, honestly. But the trend that I'm seeing overall, especially in the last 5 years, is later fire. And what is that going to look like in the long run, in 10 years? Just something to think about. Kent, did you have any thoughts? No. Kyle?
No.
Anyone else? Ray? Okay. So that was our departure from 341 fires and 400,000 acres burned. Thank you.